The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Lisa Bernhard for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Kids on the Go. Kids on the Go is generously supported by the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Sports Illustrated for Kids. The 2026 World Cup Preview. Matt Fries didn't write the book on saving penalty kicks, but he did the next best thing. When he was a student at Harvard, the current U.S. men's national team goalkeeper completed what he called a very long research project about penalty kicks. He's not quick to reveal the findings. He often jokes he'll divulge that information when he's retired. And you can't really blame Fries. If you crack the code on one of the toughest jobs in sports, you'd probably keep it to yourself, too. Penalty kicks have been a part of soccer since the late 19th century. They are awarded when a player commits an infringement, such as a handball or a foul, in the penalty area. The team taking the place kick picks a shooter who gets... The team taking the penalty kick picks the shooter who gets an uncontested shot at the opposing goalkeeper from 12 yards away. At the World Cup, though, they take on a bigger role. If a game in the knockout stage is tied, the teams go to a best-of-five penalty kick shootout. At the last tournament in 2022, a record 5 matches, including the final, were decided by penalty kicks. In each of the previous 2 cups, there were 4. This year, the field has expanded from 32 teams to 48, which means an additional round of 16 knockout round games. So we'll probably see even more contests decided from the spot. A shootout might seem like an arbitrary way to settle such an important game, and in some ways it is. The most common suggestion for an alternative involves removing one player per team every couple of minutes during extra time until someone scores the game winner. But shootouts are definitely an improvement on the previous method of settling ties, drawing lots. At the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City, Israel and Bulgaria finished their quarterfinal games tied at 1-1. Officials then brought out a giant sombrero with 2 sheets of paper in it. Israel's captain reached in and pulled out a slip that said no on it. And just like that, his team was out of the tournament and Bulgaria were on to the semifinals. As a result, Israel proposed a new way to break ties, the shootout, which puts the pressure squarely on the goalkeepers. According to a study by OPTA, 69.4% of attempts have been converted in World Cup shootouts since 1978. The number is actually higher, 79.1%, for in-game PKs during the same time frame. Still, Fries and most of his fellow stoppers welcome the test. I love the challenge of a penalty kick because it is the essence of competition. It's one person versus another, and there's a question of who will end up on top, says the 27-year-old Fries, who plays for the New York City Football Club and is one of the top goalkeepers in the Major League Soccer. So what happens when it comes time to face a penalty kick? Most goalkeepers spend time before the game analyzing the tendencies of their opponent, and they'll often create a cheat sheet to keep nearby. In a recent World Cup qualifier that pitted Italy against Bosnia and Herzegovina, a 14-year-old ball boy saw the crib sheet belonging to Italian keeper Gianluigi Donnarumma. I took it and hid it, the ball boy confessed. This had all the indications on our players, and without that list, Donnarumma would need to go by instinct. Bosnia won the shootout 4-1 as Donnarumma failed to make a single save. Assuming a keeper's notes aren't pilfered, he'll consult them and get an idea which direction the shooter likes to kick the ball. Then things get interesting. If a player likes to hit to his left, the keeper knows that. But the shooter knows that the keeper knows that. So maybe he'll go right. But then the keeper knows that the shooter knows that the keeper knows that too. It can be mentally exhausting. It's a bit of reverse psychology, says former U.S. national team keeper Brad Guzan. And then it's a double reverse and a triple reverse and quadruple. Another former U.S. goalkeeper, Tim Howard, liked to do a little profiling on the shooter, especially in the days before data was widely available. Howard assumed a big player would prefer a powerful shot, which means a right-footed shooter would hit the ball with his left. If there was a player on the field who was sort of fancy passing midfielder and was more classy and clinical, says Howard, I think they would open up and side-foot it to their right. It's an interesting psychological battle, way more than physical. One thing virtually every keeper agrees on is that once you pick a direction, commit to it. A keeper can move side to side before the ball is kicked, but he can't leave the goal line until the shot has been struck. Though, as Fries notes, you can have all the information and all the data that you want, but at the end of the day, if you feel something different in the moment, you have to change it and go with what your gut says. There are times when the best move is to not move. Fries shows that last summer in the Gold Cup quarterfinals against Costa Rica, he made 3 saves, including one on which he simply stood his ground and parried away the shot from Francisco Calvo as if he knew it was coming. And he did. It was something the Harvard grad had planned for. On the plane ride over here to the game, I was studying the penalties, he explained. I've been studying them all week. There are other tricks in a goalkeeper's disposal. Guzan liked to put the pressure on the shooter by taking him out of his rhythm. That might mean Guzan would be slow to take his spot on the goal line, but not so slow that he got a yellow card, especially if the opposing player preferred to step up and shoot quickly. You want to be able to slow the cadence down and make them think about it, and kind of delay the penalty itself for as long as possible, he says. For all the angst penalty kicks can cause, several keepers describe them with an interesting word. It's fun, says Howard. It's like a crazy science experiment. And who better to ace such an experiment than an Ivy Leaguer with a penchant for doing serious scientific research? Not to mention being a rangy 6'3" with incredibly quick reflexes. As Free says, after stonewalling Costa Rica in the Gold Cup, penalties are my thing. Now at the World Cup, on his home soil, Fries will have a chance to display the sport's biggest stage, all the things he learned in school. Global guide from tough games to rarefied air. Here's what you need to know. Hardest group. There's no I in team, but group one is one intense batch. Every World Cup, a few teams are faced with extra hard matchups. And this year, in the expanded 48-team field, France, Norway, and Senegal make an indomitable bunch. France lost in the 2022 World Cup final and will be back with Kylian Mbappe looking for victory. But Norway's star striker, Erling Haaland, is in fighting shape. He scored 16 goals in 8 matches during qualifying. It's sure to be an interesting head-to-head match when Haaland meets Mbappe on June 26th. And listen, don't mention the Africa Cup of Nations to Senegal. They were stripped of the title after a controversial final. The Lions of Teranga had an incredible run leading up to the World Cup and are ready to prove themselves worthy. I believe that was Group I, not 1. Sorry. No stressy for Messi. Just how easy do the World Cup defending champs have it? Argentina was placed in Group J, which includes Austria, ranked 24th, Algeria, 28th, and Jordan, 63rd. Argentina should soar through the group stage in what will likely be Lionel Messi's final World Cup. The Inter Miami star is looking for a second consecutive title while topping over 200 caps for the national team in the process. Thin air up there. Are you finding it hard to breathe? You might if you've been sent to the thin-aired Estadio Azteca for one of your World Cup matches. Mexico is accustomed to this high-altitude stadium, which stands at around 7,200 feet above sea level, bringing a unique factor to their home field advantage. Empower Field at Mile High in Denver is nearly 2,000 feet lower. Estadio Azteca will host the opener of the World Cup on June 11th when Mexico faces South Africa. Give him the boot. Run it back. We're predicting another golden boot for scoring superstar Kylian Mbappe. In leading France to the title in 2022, Mbappe scored a tournament-high 8 goals, including a hat trick in the final. With a total of 12 World Cup goals across 2 tournaments, he is only 4 goals away from tying Germany's Miroslav Klose all-time World Cup record of 16. Africa's ascent. An African nation has never won the World Cup, but Morocco, ranked 8th, might just be the team to do it. This small country made the semifinals in 2022, but ultimately lost to France. Though it has to contend with Brazil, 6th, in Group C, Morocco is fresh off a successful AFCON final. Led by Achraf Hakimi, the 2025 African Men's Player of the Year, Morocco should advance over Scotland, ranked 43rd, and Haiti, 83rd. It could be history in the making. Gear up. A kit down memory lane. A World Cup uniform is more than just a fashion moment for the field. It's a statement about the team's identity, mission, and history. The 2026 U.S. men's national team jerseys are a throwback to the last time the U.S. hosted the World Cup in 1994. The red and white waves on the home kit are a modern upgrade from the American flag-inspired red and white vertical stripes the team wore in 1994. Fun fact, U.S. MNT players helped with this year's design. The blue stars on the away jerseys also signal the flag as an homage to one of the most famous looks in team history. Now we ballin'. 2026 Trionda. Meet the official ball of the 2026 World Cup. Trionda means three waves and it celebrates the host countries with red, green, and blue graphics that incorporate symbols important to each country, the maple leaf, eagle, and star. Don't lose this ball over the fence, kid. The official Trionda retails for $170. 1982 Tango España. Spain hosted the 1982 World Cup, where Tango España ball made its debut. It was Diego Maradona's first World Cup. It was the last genuine leather soccer ball used in a World Cup, featuring rubberized seams. The ball was water repellent, but not very durable. It had to be changed several times during a match. 1998, tricolor. Three colors, you say? The 1998 World Cup was hosted by France and was the first time an official World Cup ball departed from the traditional black and white. The tricolor had a color red, white, and blue in honor of the French flag. 'What if Portland blazed a different trail? In 1984, one of the greatest basketball players of all time was about to enter the NBA draft. Michael Jordan left the University of North Carolina with an NCAA championship, both the Naismith and Wooden Awards, two consensus first-team All-American nods, and an 88-13 record in three seasons of college ball. Poll an anonymous group of basketball fans and ask if they would have drafted Jordan in 1984, and you're bound to find one of the most undivided groups in sports history. You'd have a harder time getting that same group to agree on which pizza toppings are best, not anchovies. Because this one is easy. In 1984, the Portland Trailblazers were sitting in prime position with an early draft pick and the possibility of signing a generational talent. So what did they do? They chose University of Kentucky center Sam Bowie. Now look, Jordan wasn't Jordan yet. He hadn't won six NBA titles or been named Finals MVP six times. He hadn't become the first player since Wilt Chamberlain to score more than 3,000 points in a single season, 1986-87. And he hadn't led the Bulls to a record 72 regular season wins in 1995-96. Okay, this isn't helping, and we haven't even mentioned his Olympic gold medals yet. In all fairness to the Blazers, though, they were coming off a great season. They traded for the draft pick a few years earlier, and in 1983, they selected a talented guard named Clyde Drexler. It's why they passed on MJ for Bowie. It would have been entirely unnecessary to draft another guard. And Drexler turned out to be a star. Clyde the Glide became a 10-time NBA All-Star, a 1992 Olympic gold medalist, and ultimately left the franchise as its all-time leader in points, games, rebounds, and steals. He also led the Blazers to the NBA Finals in 1990 and again in 1992. Unfortunately, Portland lost both series. First to the Detroit Pistons, and then, you guessed it, Michael Jordan and the booming Bulls dynasty. It would have been pretty tough to face Jordan in Game 1 of the NBA Finals, watch him rack up a career-high first-half points, 35, and not ask yourself, geez, what if we had actually drafted that guy? No shade to Glide, of course. Set pace to awesome. Jordan, as a Blazer, could have massively altered Portland's history. His greatness could have elevated the small, single pro sports city into an epicenter of sports. Portland had no other professional sports in the 90s, whereas Chicago had the White Sox, Cubs, Blackhawks, and Bears. Imagine all that fandom distilled down to a city one-fourth the size of Chicago. Instead of Portland, the city might have been called Airland. Instead of Stumptown, we could be looking at Jumptown. And because greatness begets greatness, it's entirely likely that if Portland served as Jordan's hometown in the early 90s, when he decided to give Major League Baseball a try like he did in 1994, baseball would have come to him. Introducing the Portland White Sox starring Michael Jordan. The force would have been great. Leagues would have gathered, and Portland's sports scene would have boomed beyond basketball. Consider a second major force that would have tipped the scales with Michael Jordan in Portland. Nike is just down the road. No doubt the popularity of Air Jordans would have yielded a manifest destiny of sports greatness that would have produced one of the all-time best sports towns in history. You can almost see the Air Jordan shoe prints embedded into the Oregon Trail. The phenomenon of the red, white, and black Nikes that changed sneaker culture in the 90s would have combined with Jordan calling Portland home. The impact could have been huge. And another thing, watching Michael Jordan miss becoming a Blazer should have certainly taught the powers that a very important lesson. Treat your draft choices with care. Images of Air Jordan donut shops and Larry O'Brien trophy-shaped city signs would ensure the same draft mistake wouldn't happen again, right? Enter the 2-7000 draft. Stop me if you heard this one before. Portland has a first-round draft pick and the opportunity to select the talent of a lifetime. There is no Airland or Jumptown. You still have Nikes. Air Jordans couldn't be stopped. But there are no additional NBA titles or Major League Baseball teams in Rip City. University of Texas forward Kevin Durant is a Big 12 Player of the Year and has entered the draft. So who does Portland choose? Ohio State center Greg Oden. Oden was Big 10 Defensive Player of the Year. It wasn't a bad call. It just wasn't the call again. And it was a choice riddled with bad knees and bad luck. Oden sat out his rookie year due to injuries while Portland watched another era of greatness slide by. Durant was named Rookie of the Year, and as basketball fans well know, went on to become one of the greats. A two-time NBA champion, a league MVP, an NBA final MVP, four-time NBA scoring champion, and four-time gold medalist, Durant will go down in basketball history as one of the greatest players of all time. Had Portland drafted KD, the basketball dynasty of this rainy Pacific Northwest town would have gotten a second chance it deserved. Rip City would become Slim City. Durant would have joined the Blazers roster that included Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge, setting up the city to finally make good on the title Portland had been chasing since 1977. That's a lot better than awards for best airport in the country or being known for ironic facial hair. Portland could have been the greatest sports city of all time with a stack of championships and a slew of pro teams. And all of them in killer sneakers. But I guess there's always the next draft. Maybe this time, don't choose a center. What's the call? Rejection. Kip drives towards the basket and launches a scoop shot off the backboard. Buzz, wearing a hydraulic leg extenders, rises up and swats the shot away. Kip argues it's goaltending, but Buzz says that since the ball was still going up and wasn't over the rim, it's a legal block. Who's right? It's goaltending if a defender touches the shot after it hits the backboard, even if it's still ascending and or not above the rim. Showing out. In a football game under NCAA rules, Bellingham Blue Whales running back Wally Pipes is streaking towards the end zone. As he approaches the goal line, he begins taunting players from the Archtown Anemones. An official throws a flag for unsportsmanlike conduct. The Blue Whales argue that a touchdown should still stand and a penalty should be enforced on the kick. Are they right? The Blue Whales are wrong. The 15-yard penalty is enforced from the spot of the infraction. The bouncing ball. In a penalty kick shootout, Leon Riegel of the Arlington Lions launches a shot that caroms off the post, hits goalkeeper Matthew Jube in the back, and then trickles into the net. Jube argues that since the shot was traveling away from the goal when it hit him, the play should have been called dead. What's the call? It's a goal. During a penalty shootout, the ball remains live until it stops moving or the referee whistles the play dead. However, no player other than the goalkeeper can touch the ball after it's shot. Now our mystery athlete. Nearly 4 years after retiring from her sport, the mystery athlete took home 2 gold medals from the 2026 Milan Cortina Winter Games. When she was 13 years old, the mystery athlete won a national championship in figure skating. At the age of 12, the mystery athlete became the youngest skater in history to land a triple axel in international competition. Who is she? The mystery athlete is Alyssa Liu. And a trivia challenge. In March, Heat center Bam Adebayo scored 83 points against the Wizards. It was the second highest single game total in NBA history. Which of these high scoring players has never had at least 70 points in a game? Damian Lillard, Michael Jordan, or Devin Booker? The answer is Michael Jordan. His career high was 69 points. We've run out of time for today's episode of Kids on the Go. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. Kids on the Go is generously supported by the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. I'm Lisa Bernhard, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Kids on the Go is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.